Welcome to Designing Growth, the podcast that helps owners and founders create the business of their dreams by thinking critically about the most important and often most challenging aspect of growing an agency, client relationships. From first proposal to final delivery, the founding team of Motion.io will share their own experiences alongside that of guests to help you market your services better, complete projects faster, and exceed client expectations at every step of the way. So, let's get it moving. Happy Thursday, everybody, and welcome back to Designing Growth. In today's episode, I'm back with my co-founder, Perry Rosenbloom. This episode is going to be a bit of a spiritual successor to episode 4, where Perry and I talked about our journey to create Motion.io, working together at our previous agency, Brighter Vision. And Perry shared some of his tips for agency owners scaling up by providing his biggest lessons for hiring and outsourcing. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, highly recommend you go back and check it out. During the episode, we talked briefly about some of our favorite questions for hiring, but like the topic so much, we thought it made sense to fully dive back into our favorite questions in a separate episode. So that's what we're going to be doing today. But before we get to that, I want to first ask Perry, how are you doing? What is happening in your world?
What's up, Sam? And what's up to our whole audience here? For those of you who might be watching this video, you'll see a new background here. And probably the next time you see me, you'll see another new background. My family and I have kind of been on the road for way too long. This entire summer we took off and we're having construction done on our house. And so now we're holed up in a hotel here in downtown Boulder before our 3-month long rental begins. So that's what I'm doing. Things are great. I got another cup of coffee. Hopefully not going to spill it on this computer during our recording here. But otherwise, everything's great. I got some great views of the Flatirons, the mountains here in Boulder right outside my window. It's a beautiful day, going to be up in the mid-80s, and excited to be recording this podcast and getting to work, Sam. How about you, man?
Yeah, and I'm good. I have not been all over the place like you have. You've been kind of crisscrossing the United States. You were in Colorado, and then you were in Maine. Now you're back again and, you know, staying at a bunch of different places.
But everything in between, literally everything in between, man, including Canada.
I didn't know you went to Canada. That's cool.
Yeah, so there was a big heat wave coming, and we were trying to figure out where we were going. We were in Minnesota at the time. We were planning to go through Wisconsin and the upper peninsula of Michigan, and it was just going to be nasty, like mid to upper 90s. And we realized that if you go up to the north side of Lake Superior in Canada, the lake effect there cooled it down 20, 25 degrees. So we went up through Canada along the edge of Lake Superior, and the weather was great, mid 60s to mid 70s. But the mosquitoes were not. It was impossible to go outside. Like, literally, you walked outside and you would just be swarmed by mosquitoes that, like, you know, seriously were the size of my thumbnail. It was brutal. So we escaped the heat, but we got tons of mosquito bites. My son still has, like, scratch marks on his neck from, like, a month and a half, 2 months ago from all the mosquito bites he got.
Oh, man. Brutal. Yeah, it can be up north, man. I take it for granted. In Colorado, it's like, you know, we don't really have that many mosquitoes. And then you go, you know, you go to the northeast or even just directly north to Canada, and it can be bad.
Oh, yeah. Different world. We got enough bugs to make fly fishing fun.
We'll see. Yeah, there you go. Silver lining and everything. As far as my world, man, I am just so excited. I think every single day in a way that I haven't been before to get up and start working on Motion. You know, getting up, working on Saturdays and Sunday mornings, not because I feel like I have to, but because I want to. And one of the things that I've actually really enjoyed is trying to figure out kind of the best way to put out short form video content. And that's been like something that's been very exciting to me. When we were doing Brighter Vision, short form video content, TikTok, Instagram Reels were not nearly as big of a thing as they are now. Mm-hmm. So
TikTok didn't exist.
TikTok, yeah.
or if it did, it was just about like Baby Shark. I remember making like TikToks with my kids singing Baby Shark. It was not what it is today.
Yeah, there were no businesses and brands on TikTok yet. So that's been something fun for me. I've had to learn a lot. I've had to ask a lot of people, my younger brothers, for example, for advice. some of these younger kids who are putting out TikTok videos, you know, the Gen Zers out there, it is just so effortless for them. And every time I do it, I feel
it's natural, right? It's crazy. It's like, okay, millennial.
It gets easier over time. Yeah, okay, millennial. But that's been something fun for me, so.
And you've been crushing it, man. To our audience that hasn't seen these videos yet, you got to go check out our TikTok, our Instagram Reels page, and see the content Sam's producing. You know, in the first few, you can see that progression from kind of know what I'm doing and just trying to hack something together and make it work to the video you released just the other day, which was like a 30-second clip. Gosh, I can't remember the topic now. It might have been on hiring, actually, which we're going to be talking about today. But it was just like a really excellent, well-produced clip that I'm like, yeah, if I saw that on TikTok, I'd stop and give that a heart. So to our audience, go check out what Sam's producing on TikTok or Instagram Reels, whichever you prefer. It's really fantastic. We'll have links to it in the show notes this week, of course.
Absolutely. And yeah, for me, I think it also highlights a bigger concept of, you know, learning. And that when you are starting a company, you're starting a business. You know, I think one of the biggest things that you should be doing every day is learning. Look what other people are doing, you know, read articles, check out podcasts. Those things are going to be super valuable once you recognize, you know, sort of the trends of how people are putting things out, what things they're doing to make their businesses grow. And it's something that's been constantly in the back of my mind as we're going through these early days.
And I think that's a great segue here to, if you're listening to this podcast, you're listening because you want to learn, right? So let's provide some awesome value here to our audience about how to hire and how to interview, because it is such an art, but there is some science to it as well. And if you have the right questions, and you know, don't take these questions literally, you know, tweak them for your own needs, but if you can create the right questions and find the right questions for your organization, maybe you only take one of these questions that we're going to share with you here to use in your organization. But if you take one, it's going to make your process that much more successful in hiring. You're still probably going to hire the wrong person eventually for a role because that's inevitable, right? We all do that. But hopefully this will allow you to hire for culture and train for talent and create the right organization by you're asking the right questions that are relevant to your organization and what your organization cares about.
And what I love about these questions that we have, Perry, and something I wanted to say before we go into the specific questions is, I think that for a long time, I thought interviewing was not so fun. You know, I don't think interviewing is ever something that you're going to be like, yes, I have another interview, time to go interview. But I think that what these questions can do is make interviews really engaging for both you and the person you're interviewing and have it be more of a natural conversation that gives you a window into what someone thinks. And then when we were able to narrow down the list of questions that we started asking people, I found that our interviews went so much more better. Either it was very clear right away that somebody wasn't a great fit, or they were a great fit and we were able to just keep the conversation rolling and we were so excited at the end of that interview to be able to bring this person on.
And not only were we so excited, but they were so excited because they understood who we were. They understood what we cared about. And I think for us, once we really narrow down our culture and what we stood for as an organization, then we were able to create the right questions. And so, you know, it might seem a little backwards, but once you understand who you are as an organization, what your organization cares about, your questions are going to naturally flow into that. And you're going to be able to hire for what your culture is about. Hire for someone who's going to fit into your culture and add to your culture and has the same values that you want to hire for. And that's going to make it that's going to improve your likelihood of success with a hire so dramatically. So at Brighter Vision, our culture, we have three main values. They were initiative, they were courage, and they were empathy. And everything we did in our organization was about initiative, courage, and empathy. We had a honey badger as our icon, or not our icon, as our mascot internally. And every week in our company meeting, we would say, hey, who has, and we also had an ice baby coffee mug as well. And every week we would say, hey, who in the organization has displayed a lot of initiative, courage, and empathy? And we'd give them that ice baby coffee mug. It was an all hands meeting, as well as like a $10 gift card to a coffee shop. This was back in the day when people actually like were in offices, which I hope that day eventually comes back again. It was a $10 gift card to a coffee shop, this ice baby coffee mug, and it was ingrained in everything we did. And so our hiring questions were about that. And, you know, I'd love to, you know, to kick it off with one of my favorite questions that was related to our culture was, tell me about a time you took unexpected initiative. The individual would respond, and then, and this is key, you say, can you tell me about another? Because, you know, everybody has that first part nailed in. Everyone's hopefully has prepared for the interview and can talk about how they took some initiative in their organization. But having that second follow-up is so critical because it kind of surprises a candidate and it allows you to get an unprepared answer from them that we found really, really helpful at Brighter Vision.
And generally, I think those follow-up questions that you ask can be incredibly important. And, you know, it's like what you said, they'll often tell you more about the person than the question itself. Because a lot of people can really prepare for an interview and have their list of set things that they want to hit that, you know, showcase their skills, their expertise, which is great. I'm not saying that interviewees should not do that. But I think as the hirer, you want to know the next level deeper. You know, are they able to think on their toes? Do they have another example that quickly comes to mind? Because that's going to show, you know, how often they take initiative, I think, at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And being engaged as the interviewer to ask those follow-up questions and keep them on their toes is critical to getting insight into who this person is, what kind of value they can add to your organization.
Speaking of preparing interviews, one of my questions that I really like to ask is simply, how did you prepare for this interview? I think that's a question that I generally like to ask earlier on in the interview. It's not going to tell you nearly as much, but it's going to give you some early hints of maybe the direction you want to take the interview and if they're going to be a good fit flat out. Because if you hear things from them and they say, oh, you know, I checked out your website and just kind of looked around the internet, if they stop there, that to me is a signal that's saying, ooh, okay, we got to dive in a little bit deeper. If they are saying, I prepared for this interview by going to your website, I did a Google search of the owner and the, you know, the team leads, I found out what types of podcast content they're on, I checked out blog posts, I looked at the companies you partner with, I looked where you exist in the industry. That to me, I'm like, okay, I don't really need to know anything else about how you prepare for this interview. I know you're prepared.
Here's your job offer, right?
Exactly.
And to counter that, like, you know, they don't really have any kind of response beyond, yeah, I found your website, spent a few minutes on it. And then they can't really like tell you about the company, tell you about motion.io. It's like, all right, well, hey, thanks for coming in or joining us on the Zoom. We don't think this is the right fit. Don't want to take up any more of your time. Let's end this here.
Yep.
So on one thing that was really important, that is always really important to me as a leader and as a manager, is healthy disagreements. And we always encouraged people at Brighter Vision, and we'll do the same at Motion. We're already building it into our culture between you, Zach, and myself, is healthy disagreements to come to a conclusion together. And so I loved asking folks, tell me about a time you strongly disagreed with your manager and what did you do to convince her that you were right? and what ultimately happened. And so what I really wanted to do is help to get an understanding of how they handle conflict, how a candidate handles disagreement, and how they go about advocating for themselves and their beliefs. And it's okay if you don't necessarily convince somebody to come on to see things from your perspective, but I want to understand that, like, hey, you're not scared to advocate for something you believe in strongly. And, you know, we certainly had our fair share of employees like that at Brighter Vision. And sometimes it rubbed some people the wrong way. But generally what ended up happening was those people got promoted because they advocated and they took a belief and they believed in it so strongly. And sometimes we didn't go that route with them and the belief that they had, but it opened our eyes and opened doors to seeing things from another perspective that we as leaders were probably missing. And it allowed us to have a healthy disagreement, a healthy conversation, and ultimately plot a path together that we feel was really fruitful. So that's a question that I'm really a big fan of asking folks.
Yeah, I like that one a lot too. I think that the thing I look out for in that answer though is, are they defensive in how they explain that, or are they actually telling us about a productive, healthy disagreement? Because I think those are two very different things.
100%, man.
And along the lines of healthy disagreements, I think healthy disagreements, in my opinion, are one of the most important things to a culture, because there's a lot of layers of the onions to it. One, it's somebody who wants to make change when those healthy disagreements are happening.
That's a great point.
They are passionate, they want to help the business grow, and they're just disagreeing on how you get to that path or how you solve this specific problem. The second part of that is, I think that there is tremendous value in being able to separate your personal feelings from an outcome that you want to achieve. And those healthy disagreements say a lot about that. When you are disagreeing with someone in a healthy way, I think it should be evident that this is not something personal. This is my opinion of how we grow and how we grow together, versus this is me wanting to, you know, stick my flag in the ground and show that I've done something. It's, hey, let's come to this together and grow together and have this discussion.
Generally speaking, if I'm understanding you correctly, Sam, and I would agree with the sentiment, is you want to make sure that the person you're hiring isn't going to die on a hill all the time for anything. Like, you know, there should be conversation and it should be fluid, and you should be open to changing your mind and your belief just as much as you want to convince somebody of your beliefs.
100%. Nailed it.
Speaking of growth, do you mind if I take this next? Oh, sorry. I think I got a good segue here into another question on growth. So then I want to hear your next question, man. But man, one of my absolute favorites when you're talking about growth is, if you were to take over as the CEO of your company tomorrow and had to increase your company's current rate of growth, where would you invest? And, you know, that helps me understand, like, we want to hire leaders, right? Like, even if you're going to be hired for an individual contributor role, we want to see that you're thinking critically about your company. You're going to be able to take that initiative and have the courage to speak up about how to grow your current company or the company we're going to hire you for.
That's another phenomenal question. And the reason why I like that one is it can be very easily customized to different departments. That's one of my favorite ones to ask any marketing role is, hey, I'm giving you $10,000 to increase the number of leads we're getting each month. How do you do it?
Boom.
What aren't we doing currently that you would like to do?
And so you're saying, how would we do it in our organization? Like, if we're going to hire you tomorrow, I'm going to give you 10K. How do you improve our leads?
Yes, exactly.
And so when you're asking that question, what are you looking for specifically, Sam?
So I'm not necessarily looking for their ability to understand our marketing funnel from top to bottom and show us things that we might not be doing that we should be doing. What I'm asking for is their ability to quickly recall or quickly give the strategies that they've seen before or strategies that they would like to try that they would like to implement. So, you know, we could be doing pay-per-click ads, but still they might say pay-per-click ads. If they do that, I'm going to say, hey, well, okay, what are we offering on these pay-per-click ads? What does the copy look like? And you can dive into those things from there. Or you could, or if they say something like we should be doing more short form video content, I ask, you know, what does that content look like to you? How do you get that produced? What's your standard operating procedure for making sure it goes out, you know, on a set timeline each week? So that question in particular, I find really valuable for any marketing hires.
Love that. What's your next question, man?
My next question is, and I almost bet this one is on your list because I've heard you ask it quite a few times. We've been in a lot of interviews together, admittedly, but
just a handful, right?
Just a handful, you know.
Oh, dude, I'd say closer to 100, to be honest. Like, when you include all the interviews we did, like all the people we didn't hire, right?
Yeah, now that I think about it, it's like, wow. Yeah, it's definitely closer to 100. But anyways, my question is, it's a year from now. What impact on the business have you made in the year since you've joined? And I think that can be a really good question to ask as a follow-up to questions about, you know, hey, I'm giving you this set amount of budget, or what initiatives are you doing within the company? Because they're already thinking about that. I think this question of it's a year from now, what impact have you had on the business, is a little bit unfair to circle back around on at like the, you know, a couple questions later if you've asked them some personal things. But I really like this question because it shows their ability to think forward and also think about goals. We had talked about it in episode 4, Perry, and I had shared that one of the best pieces of advice I got from you is set a goal and work backwards from that goal. And that's going to give you a specific set of things that you need to do or actions you need to take to achieve that goal. Asking this question of, it's a year from now, what impact have you made, shows for me the ability of someone to establish that goal and think backwards from there.
And you know, I think something that's really important to highlight for our audience who might not be hiring a marketer per se, but this is a question, and all of these questions are ones that you can be asking of anyone in any role. You could be hiring a designer, and you want to understand what kind of impact are they actually going to make in your organization. One of my favorite hires we made at Brighter Vision was for an entry-level designer. And within 3 months, in her own free time, she went and wrote a script in Python that solved a major, major pain point and challenge we had with feedback, which ironically we're working to solve here at Brighter Vision, because that problem still has not been solved properly. We had to create a custom script in Python to pull data from some application into Google Sheets, and then we had to write our own scripts in Google Sheets to make it work right. And anyways, I mean, that completely changed how we were able to accomplish the work we were doing in a given day. And, you know, from there, she went on to become a QA, quality assurance analyst in the company, and that eventually moved on after about 2.5 years. But, you know, that's the kind of impact anyone can have. You know, when you're going, you're taking that initiative on your own to figure something out and have the courage to bring a new solution to the table. And that's that kind of culture, again, going back to culture, that's fostered from within. You know, especially if you're an organization that doesn't have a ton of money to make a hire and you have to hire an entry-level person, by creating that kind of culture of innovation and that culture of courage, that culture of, hey, I can come to you with a solution that you might have not thought of. And I don't want to be stepping on any toes here, but here's a solution. I think it's going to really change things. Like, that's the kind of person that we like to hire at Brighter Vision. And I think if you were to go and look to hire at your company, you're going to help create more of an innovative culture as well.
When you talk about this sort of culture of innovation, Perry, one of the things that comes to mind for me is when innovation can get stifled internally. And the way that I think that that usually happens when innovation is stifled, people are bringing you good ideas and you know, they're either floating off into space or they never get implemented properly, or they don't even come to you in the first place at all with a new idea. I think one of the things that prevents those ideas coming forward, and it sounds a little bit silly to me, but I almost think that it's credit for those ideas. And that's why I really liked our Ice Ice Baby that we would do in our all hands meeting, because it allowed people to get credit for those ideas in a sort of
public forum. And it also allows people to get credit in a public forum. What that did is it enabled people, whether they were more introverted and didn't want to speak up in a large setting, it allowed them to get the same level of recognition that they would get if they were like the type of person who would speak up in a meeting. There's people who are like, hey, this is an all hands meeting. I'm going to raise my hand and I'm going to speak up and I'm going to say my piece and try and add to the conversation here. And then there are also people who are like, hey, I'm going to sit in this meeting. I'm going to think, and I'm going to go back and spend the next like day or two thinking about things that were said. And then I'm going to approach somebody. I'm going to share my idea, or I'm going to go home and I'm going to work on it and then come and present something. But putting that culture in place that allows for that, for people to take risks and for people to be recognized for the risks that they took in a way that is accepting no matter what type of personality type you're dealing with in an organization is really important. And, you know, we didn't have that at Brighter Vision for a long time in my agency. You know, our first few years, like I didn't know what on earth I was doing as a leader. And, you know, we were just like flying by the seat of our pants trying to figure things out. And it wasn't until we were intentional about understanding what our culture is and hiring for that culture and getting rid of people that didn't fit that culture that we were able to really grow as an organization. And so if you're thinking about your business right now and you don't know what you stand for and your employees can't tell you what you stand for as an organization, then it's important to take some time and step back and write that down and figure out how are we going to operate to this culture on a daily basis. You don't need to have the same culture we had. The culture we had at Brighter Vision is not going to be the same culture we create at Motion. But we're going to stand for something, and we're going to hire for that culture and fire for that culture. People don't, you know, or separate folks from the organization. If we don't necessarily see that, you know, the culture and the individual are going in the same direction.
Yeah, what's that phrase? If you don't stand for anything, you'll fall for nothing.
That's exactly right. You know, like there was a reason why, you know, after we were acquired, it was so critical for us to maintain our culture. And you know, if that started falling apart, we saw people leave the organization, and rightfully so, to find a new culture. And, you know, one thing that I really love to focus on when asking these questions and these interview questions is feedback. You know, a question I really love to ask was, what's one critical piece of feedback you've received that was really difficult to hear? Because in a culture that, for us, that was innovative and pushing, always pushing the bar forward, we need to hire people that can both give and receive feedback. And so what did you do with that information? What did you learn about yourself? You know, we found that, you know, hearing, growing, and learning from feedback is so super important in our culture, at least. And if someone can't take feedback, they weren't a good fit for us culturally.
Yeah, and that process of feedback, incredibly, incredibly important. And people who are accepting of feedback, who really internalize and are able to do something with it, are the people you're ultimately going to see the most growth out of, in my opinion.
What was, you know, we're at like the 30 minute mark here. What was one of your favorite questions when we would flip the table with an interviewee and say, okay, give them the opportunity to ask a question? Do you have a favorite question or two from that stage of an interview? Because that's a super important part of the interview process as well.
Yeah, I do. And I think that this part of the interview is normally towards the end of it. But in those sort of questions where we are flipping it on its head, one of my favorite questions for that part is, what can I tell you about working here? I really like that because it shows they are thinking critically about it in the ways that they follow up to that question. A perfectly acceptable response to that question of what can I tell you about working here is, hey, what does a normal day look like in this role? And, you know, you can then go through, hey, these are the primary responsibilities. This is what you'll be doing. And they're probably going to dive into those. And your interviewee is probably going to dive into specific aspects of that as you start talking about, you know, what it looks like to work at your company.
And allowing the person the opportunity to ask that is super important and understand what that role is going to look like. One of my favorite flip the script questions, and this will be the last one I contribute here, would be, what have I not asked you that I should have? And my logic behind that question is it's really helpful. I want to give the person who's interviewing the space to sell themselves, the space to show off a little bit. Like, I know that we weren't fully comprehensive in all of our questions. We didn't get you a chance to highlight everything you wanted to highlight. So highlight something for me and leave me with that sense of, hey, this person really excels in this piece or understands this piece of the puzzle that we don't and can add this to the organization. So that was one of my favorite flip the script questions.
Yeah, completely agree. And as you near the end of that interview, those giving the interviewee the space to ask those mm-hmm. questions is also really reflective of your culture. And it shows them that you care and you're establishing that ability to have discussions and to open it up to their ideas and the questions they want to ask from day one. So what I want to do now, Perry, we talked through our big interview questions, but there was one that I left out, and I intentionally left out because I want to end the interview by asking you this question.
Oh man, here you go. You're throwing a curveball here at me at first thing in the morning on a Monday morning when we're recording this. I love it. Let's go for it, man.
So Perry, what are some things outside of work that you're most passionate about?
Oh, okay. Well, one thing I'm most passionate about is my family and my kids and my wife and dog. I was so fortunate to be able to spend this past summer not really working a little bit, but mostly not working, and to spend the time with my family and fully engaged with them. And now they're back at school and everyone's really grateful for that time and grateful to be back at school. And then, you know, from a non-family perspective, big skier, got to hit the slopes with you for the first time last winter, Sam, which was awesome. It was a great day.
Oh, yeah, it was a great day,
so
too.
That's like my winter passion. And lately, you know, I've really been getting into fly fishing. It's been a lot of fun for me. How about you? Tell our audience more about you, man.
Yeah, so, you know, for me, at the heart of everything is family. It's just, you know, family comes first. I think it's why we do so many things, why we really do a lot of things in our life. And, you know, my wife, my dog, we're expecting a kid in January. You know, everything that I do in my work and my day-to-day is all for them. And it's, you know, being able to spend time with them is incredibly important. Outside of that, what I'm passionate about, I love music.
You know, I wouldn't have guessed with the three guitars behind you.
I know. Yeah, who would have thought that this guy likes music? But yeah, playing guitar, going to shows, love that. And right behind that is cooking and eating, because I love that, because it goes right along. You know, when I play music by myself, it's, you know, kind of a solo thing. But cooking is right there with family, because when you're cooking for people, they're either enjoying food that you've made or you're out enjoying food together. It's a real just like almost magical and religious thing to me, where you're sitting down, you're having a conversation, looking each other in the eyes, and you're spending time with each other in a way where there's, you know, no screens and no distractions. So
I loved how you described cooking and looking each other in the eyes and no screens and no distractions. And one thing, man, that's been driving me crazy though lately is these QR code menus, because you have to pick up your phone and you scan a QR code. And inevitably, when you're looking at your phone in a QR code menu, you're going to get a notification. You're going to, like, I can't at least, like, not go and click an extra button that I wanted to click. Like, I hate that. And I hope these restaurants get rid of the QR codes, or at least give you the opportunity to have a physical menu so you can look at the menu, you put it down, and you talk, and then you can look at the menu again. You're not getting distracted on your phone. But I'd love to end the episode then with the same thing that we asked last week. I'm going to just pivot it a little bit because I haven't been able to cook at all over the last week or so being in mostly a hotel. So what's one thing that you've cooked or eaten out that really rocked your world over the last week?
Oh, yeah. I love this. I mean, we could do a whole episode on food, but not the purpose of this podcast. So the best thing that I ate this week, yesterday I went to the farmer's market, South Pearl Farmer's Market here in Denver, and found this beautiful okra that was just speaking to me in a way that I have not had an ingredient speak to me in so long. And I'm like, I have to make gumbo with this okra. There's no other option, Aaron. We have to go home and make gumbo. So that's what I cooked yesterday. That is something that took all day to make. It's very labor intensive, but was phenomenal. How about you, Perry?
Oh, that's awesome. Gosh, good okra and a good gumbo, man, phenomenal. And my battery on my Mac is close to dying here, so I'm going to be super fast. The hotel I'm staying at, right from the window where I'm sitting right now, I can see this place across the street called Mason's Dumpling Shop. I love a delicious soup dumpling, and I've never been able to find one in the Boulder area. And we've been in this hotel for like 3 days now, and I've been there twice. I'm going to have it for lunch today, some leftovers. So I'd have to go with some soup dumplings from Mason's Dumpling Shop here in Boulder.
Man, I got to get there. I was telling you, I think that has to be maybe our first Motion.io lunch break when we get together and do some work in person.
Oh, let's do it. Let's figure it out for sure, man. We need a lunch break here soon.
Love that. Love that.
Hope you all enjoyed geeking out on our food.
Yeah. And I promise you, whenever Perry is on an episode, you can probably expect at least 5 to 10 minutes of food related conversation. So you have that to look forward to in future releases that we put out. Thanks so much for joining us, everyone. This has been another great episode of Designing Growth. Hope you enjoyed it. We release every Thursday on Apple, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Also, wanted to mention, we would love to have you join the Motion.io launch list. And you can do that by going to our website at motion.io/launch. As a member of the Motion.io launch list, you'll get all of the great content we're putting out, along with product updates and opportunities to become a founding customer of Motion.io. The way our founding customer program works is that in our weekly newsletter, we'll send out opportunities to share your expertise, insights, or feedback with us. In exchange for donating your time, you'll become a founding customer of Motion.io. Not only does this give you the chance to directly influence what we're building at Motion.io so that we can build a tool that's going to solve your problems, but it also gives you the ability to unlock exclusive benefits, free swag, as well as lifetime white glove support for as long as you're using Motion.io. To sign up for our launch list and get opportunities to become a founding customer, go directly to our website at motion.io/launch. Once again, that's motion.io/launch. See you next Thursday, everybody.